Welcome to the Canvas Rebel podcast, where we believe your story matters. Your viewpoint and your insights matter. In our view, there is far too much coverage of the trends that ivory tower professors and billionaire fund managers are seeing. What's the edge in hearing the billionaire consensus view over and over again? The edge comes from hearing new perspectives and new information, like from the wedding planner who's worked with hundreds of couples during the pandemic and has noticed that new couples are allocating significantly more of their wedding budgets on small details like personalized neon signs, or hearing from an accountant who's seeing how there is a huge uptick in e-commerce clients generating revenue from in-person pop-ups. Those sorts of insights are what Canvas Rebel is all about. And today, Madison is chatting with some of our content partners about trends and lessons learned. Content partners help us in so many ways, from sponsoring our mission to spreading the word about the work that we do and collaborating with us on content like this. And so with no further ado, here's Madison with today's panel.
Thank you everyone for being here. Welcome back to another episode of our Voyage podcast. My name is Madison. I am so excited to be talking about finding your purpose and sharing that through books, speeches, public speaking, all kinds of good stuff. So today I have with me three very talented and well-rounded individuals, and I'd love if you could all just introduce yourselves, tell me your name and a little bit about what you do, and we'll go from there.
Well, hello everyone. Good morning. I am Charlanette, also known as Charlie Marcole by my author name. I am a speaker, a host, an entrepreneur, and the voice this generation needs to know. I just had released this book called My Cool Crown, where I am empowering and inspiring young girls, melanated girls, to know that this is the crown that we can't put down. And so I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, wonderful.
All right, you guys, I am Rashida Festa. I am an author, an actress, and a playwright. And I recently released my book, Who Lives in the Little Wooden House. It's a children's book. I do write across genres. So I write self-help books as well as children's books. My latest project, that children's book, that's something I had a lot of fun with. Nothing like promoting literacy and putting a smile on our little kiddo's face. It's always fun for me. Something that's very near and dear to my heart.
Amazing.
As far as playwriting goes, I started dabbling with that about 3-4 years ago. My play At All Costs is going to be on stage. It's in production now. We're expecting to have that live on February 25th in Brooklyn, New York. So that is something that I am super, super duper excited about. And I poured my heart into it. I put a lot of work into it. And you know, it's just something that I'm hoping that everyone will find solace in and will resonate with them in somehow. And so I've always found my voice through the performing arts, kind of a way I express myself. So acting and writing is something that I do. And it's what I plan to do for the rest of my life.
Wonderful.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ramon Marquis. I am located here in Miami, Florida. I am a social worker by trade. I've been a social worker for over 10 years, working with child welfare, youth, as well as, unfortunately, people who are in hospice care. I started that about 2 years ago prior to COVID. So that was a kind of interesting time to switch to the medical field. Mm-hmm. However, I am a podcast host. My podcast is called The QB Zone. I'm also an author. I recently released my fifth book in October of last year. It's a poetry book. I do poetry as well as young adults. And I also have a strong passion and joy for the youth, but also my community, which is why I have a foundation, True Phoenix Foundation Incorporated, where I do mentoring conferences, mentoring sessions, as well as a scholarship fund to benefit youth that want to attend an HBCU. So I'm very happy to meet you guys and talk with you today.
Amazing. Well, thank you all so much for your time today. I would love to dive right in. Have you always been called to be an author, and how did you find your purpose in life? I know that's a really heavy question right off the bat, but.
Okay, I'll go first.
Yeah, go for it.
Mine started in the early emergent years. I remember as a kid in elementary school, when my teacher would teach new words, I was amazed how words and letters came together to make sentences, or how sounds came together to make words. My friends will often call me a wordsmith. When I was in the fourth grade, they had a competition entitled The Most Influential Woman in Our Life. And I won. And the governor of Texas at the time, Governor Clements, you can tell I'm an educator because I remember all of those things, sent an award to my school. And everybody was really shocked, including myself, because I was just writing from the heart. What I found out, because I was raised in a single parent home and I was troubled in some areas, but what I found out is that writing always made me feel better.
Yeah.
And I was able to pour out my emotions, mm-hmm. my feelings on loose leaf paper, and it never judged me. It always accepted me for who I was and never said, "Why are you writing this, girl? Why are you feeling this way, girl?" You know, it always accepted me for who I am. And so I literally say writing saved my life. And it started at an early age because I was troubled. I was troubled with weight and body shaming. I still struggle with my weight. Hello. But, you know, as a child, you don't know where to place those things. Yeah. And so it saved my life starting at an early age.
Wow.
It's so interesting that you say you don't know where to place those things as a child, because I think for me, that's kind of where mine started as well. Mm-hmm. I was going through childhood trauma that led me to being raised by my grandparents, right? So I had a lot of different complexes and issues, especially being a male, no father there, no dad. There was just a lot going on. And so I just started writing one day how I was feeling, because I felt like I didn't have a voice. I feel like no one will understand. I've always had good grades in school. So I just started writing, not even knowing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I know, I just had a binder full of emotions and full of words. Mm. And so I found out at a very young age, like, wait a minute, this feeling feels good. So I feel like an adult may not be able to understand me. My notebook will understand me. I can get it out. And of course, I got older and got more, I guess you could say, spiritual. That kind of took it to a different level as well. But I didn't think of myself as an author more so until I got to college, because I've always loved reading books. I've read a wide array of books. And so I always felt like some of my life experiences was as good or better than some of the ones I read about in books. And I knew that my family and friends were vastly entertained when I would tell stories, whether it was my courage or the personality. So I said, let me try this. So it really started off as a blog. And it grew from there. And I had people who supported me and encouraged me and poured into me. And that led me to writing my first book, which was a collection of short stories. But it really started from a place of me needing a safe space to go to, a safe space to turn to. And I think that the seeds were planted at a very young age, and it just grew from there due to life experiences.
Wow.
And I think I find that relatable as to what, you know, Ramon and, you know, Sherlyn had said. It's really kind of, when you're writing, for me anyhow, it's kind of like a safe space. You know, it's like a safety zone. You just escape that. Different people have their go-to things.
Yeah.
Or into exercising. Some people are into, you know, cooking, whatever that you're into. For me, it's writing. You know, that's always been my space. And I can recall growing up as a little girl, when all my childhood friends, they were outside playing with their dolls, their bikes, I was somewhere with a pen and a piece of paper just going to work. And my mom would say, "Why don't you go outside and play?"
Yeah.
I just never found joy in that.
Yeah.
So just sitting down and just writing, even something as simple as starting with my journal, is really how it started, just putting my thoughts onto paper. And you really would be surprised, like, the minute you start writing, how much you have in your thought process. Like, there is a lot inside. And the minute you start writing, it just starts flowing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I really started as a child. And then it grew from journaling to where now it's a profession for me. It's something you know, I take very seriously. I hone my craft. I work on my craft all the time. And you sometimes it can feel a little bit lonely outside of the literary world. You feel like people don't really understand you.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. But I mean, I find solace in what I do and I love it. You know, I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, I could write for hours. There's an adage that says, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yes.
And for me,
that's true.
It's so interesting that you bring that up. I literally was just writing a caption for an Instagram post last night talking about how it really is true. If you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work. And once you are at a point in your life where you can find that thing that brings you joy and sparks enough joy to sustain you, it really is a complete shift in mindset. I think it's a beautiful thing. My next question has been one of my favorite questions I have asked on the podcast thus far, just because there's so much wisdom that I have gained personally, and I know our listeners and viewers will benefit from as well. What advice would you give your younger self before breaking into this industry?
Oh my goodness. I think that going into this industry, you have to know who you are. You really have to know who you are. You have to be in touch with yourself. You have to be confident, because the minute you don't know who you are is when others start telling you who you are. Okay. So going in, looking back, it's kind of like the minute you're journaling and you're writing and it's for you and your eyes only, and then you build up a little bit of confidence and you start sharing your work with family members and with friends.
Yeah.
And you kind of sit and wait for that validation and you're looking, what do you think? What do you think? That sort of thing. And then you take that next jump and you publish your work publicly. Yeah. It's now out there for the world to love or to critique, right? But at the end of the day, I stay true to what I love. Okay. Mm. I come from a place of authenticity. And so I'm always going to be true to that. So yeah. I appreciate you. I have, you know, there's an audience, a level of readership. And if everybody loves my work, fantastic. But I think that if you go into this business seeking validation, then you are going to be in trouble, because with the arts, I feel like it's very subjective.
Yeah.
A lot of subjectivity. So I think about how many times you're watching a show and you think, I love this actor. And somebody would go, oh, she's horrible or he's horrible. And you're thinking, really? They're awesome. But we see things through the different lens.
That's absolutely.
You know, it's very, very subjective. So I can walk into a store and I can see a painting and go, that's a beautiful painting. Maybe you will see it from a different perspective, and it's okay. It's all love. Yeah. So that's what I would tell my younger self, is just knowing who you are, understanding that everyone is not going to love what you do. And at the end of the day, okay.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important to also be open-minded and patient, because there may be times where you can always improve, no matter how great of a writer you are. I think criticism, constructive criticism, is important. You can always take your writing to the next level. But it's a lot of times you need to know when to, you know, take the meat and throw away the bones, because some people are just going to purposely read something just to be negative, just to quote hate on it. So you got to kind of differentiate between the two. I also think that it's great to be patient, because there may be times where, listen, any aspect of art is fickle. Whether you're an actress, you're a singer, you're a writer, it's fickle. You could, one thing can be the trend or the hot thing at the moment, and then the next minute, not so much. But that doesn't define your art. At some point in time, that trend is going to come right back around, and you're still going to have that loyal fan base that you can still feed into you, and then they'll, you know, and you'll feed into them. So I think important to be patient, be open-minded, but I also love what she said about just being true to yourself and be authentic, because a lot of times when you get a certain level of success, you may have people who can be in your ear and say, no, you might want to go this route, or maybe you should be this type of writer or this type of artist, but you're going to have some conflicts internally if you write from an area of transparency, and that's not you, that's not the real you.
Yeah.
So are you really willing to, for lack of better words, sell your soul to the devil for more fame and money? How happy will you really be?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, and I'm going to piggyback off of you, Ramon. Don't take feedback as failure. Some people look at feedback as failure, and it's not. Take it, like he said, the meat, throw away the bone. Because some people are like, and she said it too, it's very subjective. But also, what people need to realize is that they're not writing for friends and family. Mm. A lot of times we get these books and we expect our friends and family to be the first one to buy. Yeah. Listen. Oh, no, no. Listen, no, 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 said the cat and the dog. You are writing for a global audience.
Yes.
Do not keep your friends and family in mind. Because especially if you write young adult novels, sometimes the character is loosely based off of you.
Your family. Hello.
So don't look at them to, you know, be your audience. You are writing for a global, international purpose, and go in that and walk in that. You know, they don't buy it. I meant to get that. You know, no, don't feel offended by it. Just keep pushing. I haven't bought your book yet. Keep pushing, because I really didn't write it for you. I wrote it for a global audience.
That's right.
It has an underlining message, and it's not about your friends and family.
That's an actually good point, in the sense of, you know, when I started writing, it's kind of like I would pour my heart into something, and then you send it off to the editor and they tear it apart and you're thinking, are you serious? But now you realize that the editors are your friends.
Yeah.
They really are. They're your support system. Like, they want you to put forth your best work. So it's kind of like, if you're looking at your friends and family, they love you. They don't want to hurt your feelings. They don't want to hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
When you're giving your work to someone that's objective and is not as invested, then they can see things objectively and through a different set of lens than your friends and family can. So, you know,
yeah, you're absolutely right. My next question, how do you create meaningful connections in your life today?
I like face-to-face contact. I don't just depend on social media, for example. One of the things I do, like with my blog, my podcast, in between writing books, I like to do events, for example, where it may be like an open mic, kind of like in the movie Love Jones. If I'm, you know, I may invite other poets, other artists. So let's kind of have like a community. Let's support each other. I think that's the way to be relatable to people. Also, your art to them, your work to them. But I also, my podcast, I like to have topics that people can relate to, whether it's surviving domestic violence, surviving foster care, various relationship topics, And I like to have sometimes 3 or 4 guests at one time where we're discussing these topics. I like to feel as if people have a safe place to give their opinions, to have their voices heard. And I also like to have a balance. I like to have entertainment, but also enlightenment, education, whether it's an episode I did recently with the Hip Hop Caucus. And so I like to kind of make sure that there's that balance, but inclusion of different types of people.
Yeah. Love that.
That's good.
Yeah, I think for me, I concur with what Ramon was saying. And to add to that, surrounding yourself with like-minded people is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the arts. Sometimes the journey can get a little bit lonely at times because, like I said, people who are not in performing arts, sometimes they don't really relate as well as or as much to what you do. They may, you get a 9-to-5, they don't really get it. So when you surround yourself with people who are in your corner, you're there for them, you're a support system for each other. You know, find each other relatable. You're on that same path together. You're going to have your ups, your downs. And at the end of the day, you have a tight niche of that community that understand what our purpose is. Why we do what is our why? Why do we get up every day? What makes her smile? This is what keeps us going.
Yeah.
I mean, those connections to me, it's instrumental to have them, and they're just immeasurable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was going to say, when you cultivate these circles, make sure you remove the negative people and the naysayers.
Yeah.
I don't want to be connected to anyone that says things like, how's your little book going? How's your little business going? Because it's not little. It's big right. to me. I'm dreaming outside of the box. I am.
Amen.
I'm putting all my savings in this. So yeah. it's not little, it's big. So when you are cultivating these circles, and like she said, with like-minded people, and you will know if you're with like-minded people, you will know if people in your circle is really about that life or really just riding the wave. And yeah. at this stage in our life, we don't need wave riders. That's We're not right. at the beach. This is not a beach process, honey. This is, I have poured my whole life, my whole spirit, my whole heart, my mind, my soul, everything that matters to me. And so while you are making those connections stronger, be sure to remove those negative people.
Yes.
It's interesting you say that. And it gave me chills when I listened to you say that, because between my fourth and fifth book, there were years. I had given up on the writing. I had given up on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. As I stated earlier, I was with my grandparents. And so that was my mom and dad. And I lost my grandmother in 2019. And so when that happened, my whole world shattered. I gave up on everything. And so it was this year. Well, no, we're in 2023. Sorry. Last year, when 2022 started, just working on healing, getting back to my joy and passion, getting that fire for life back. And the writing was... really, the writing and the podcast was my saving grace, I really feel like. And I didn't realize at the moment. But what stood out to me is, as I slowly started to get back into writing, I was preparing myself for my last book, I really would refer to, I had to change my mentality and my own words. Because I would say, oh, my little podcast or this little book I'm writing. And I literally had a friend who let me have it in her own colorful language. And really changed my mentality of how I viewed myself and how I viewed what I was doing, and helped me get confidence back, helped me get that self-realization back, helped me realize, look at the things that, look where we came from, and look what we've been able to accomplish. So it's not a little podcast. It's not a little book. You've literally affected people. When I think about certain topics I've had on my podcast, whether it's surviving suicide, surviving domestic violence, I've been openly talking about my own mental health journey on it.
Yeah.
She had to remind me, look at the people who have called and texted you or inboxed you, because certain episodes have benefited them, encouraged them, reminded them of their journey. So it's not a little podcast. It's not a little book. You really are affecting and benefiting people. And so when she said about removing negative, sometimes that's ourselves. And so I literally had to check myself.
Yes.
Move that out of me. And it wasn't overnight, but through work, remove that out of me. And I make space for the right components, the right people. And one thing I say is grace, space, and pace. I am and going through life at my own pace. I'm not comparing myself to nobody else. I'm giving myself the grace to know certain things were not my fault, or it's okay if I make mistakes. That doesn't make me a failure or define my future. And I have to give space for the right people, the right things to help me elevate and go in the direction, the trajectory that I've been destined to go.
Yeah,
that's good. Because listen, she talked about connection. And let me say this, Miss Madison, the first connection is you.
Yeah.
First, you need to be connected with yourself.
Absolutely. And
that's one thing that people, let me tell you something. People can tell some phony baloney before anything pop up. A lot of people walk in that spirit of discernment. So if you're not connected with you, your connections doesn't even matter. So the first step is being connected with you. Plug into you and unplug the other things. You know, don't feed the distraction and hone in on the focus. Yeah. So the first connection is with you.
Absolutely. You know, you're all of you are so
spot on with removing the naysayers, whether that's yourself or people in your life. I feel like, especially in my personal life, a lot of the times it's family and friends. And I've kind of had a reality check of, are these people who I actually want to keep in my inner circle and support me? The way they talk about me and my business, I am not an author or a public speaker, but I am a photographer and I do run my own photography business outside of doing the social media during the day. And I often get, you know, comments at the Thanksgiving dinner table or, you know, via email on the weekly family phone calls, like, oh, how's the little photography business? Oh, when are you thinking about getting a real job? What they don't realize, this is a real job. This is my career. And working in a creative field is a career. Just because I don't work a 9-to-5 and wear a suit and go into an office for a giant billion-dollar corporation does not mean that I am not successful. And that does not mean that I have not found my purpose in life. I found mine, and it looks different than the traditional norms that my family and a lot of my so-called friends think is what life should be like. But it's definitely been a self-exploring journey for me. Sorry to go off on a tangent about myself here. That's not the purpose of the episode, but I just
had to say that.
Exactly.
And listening to you saying that, I was thinking, oh my goodness, I can so relate to that, right?
Yeah.
Because people attribute success to being a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher,
this,
and it's kind of like, I mean, people have different paths in life, different paths. There are different avenues that you're going to go on, and it doesn't mean that mine is any less important than yours, right? And so going back to what I said earlier about validation is kind of like being mindful about who you seek validation from, because like Madison says, the primary ones are your family and friends.
Yeah.
Right. It seems contrary to what it should be, because you should think that those people should be the ones who are your support system. But a lot of times, not.
Yeah.
Not at all. You know, Steve Harvey, I love, he's got this saying that he says, if you have a big dream and you want to kill it, tell it to a small-minded person.
Absolutely.
And that rings true every single time. So. Now I learned to keep my dreams and my aspirations to myself. I nurture it. It's like a plant, you know. I water it, I nurture it, and I'm very protective of it.
Yeah.
So I'm not letting you anywhere near it because you're not going to destroy it.
Yeah.
No.
Creatives are often misunderstood.
Yeah.
That's what I come to realize. And I don't know if you guys feel that way. Like
Absolutely.
You say, like, a job, like we're often misunderstood. But if it wasn't for creatives, you wouldn't have movies, you wouldn't have podcasts, you wouldn't have videos, you wouldn't have all of these things that grab your attention to keep you entertained.
That's
so we are often misunderstood, but people love what we do, which is really crazy.
I'm
it's so funny, Madison, when Madison said about the Thanksgiving dinner,
yeah,
I kid you not, this was around Thanksgiving time. This was coming from like an acting studio. And you know how they kind of send around mass emails? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, oh, it was something to the effect of, oh, as we enter this Thanksgiving season and you're getting ready to gather with your family and friends, how do you deal with the big question at the table of, so what have you been in lately? And I'm thinking, seriously? Really? If I'm going to have Thanksgiving dinner with you, I may want to rethink spending time with you.
Yeah.
If I have to feel that question ahead of time, because I know it's coming, right? And
yeah.
It's going to make me feel less than about who I am and what it is I do. Are you the kind of person that I want to be around? I don't think so.
Yeah.
And it was just mind-boggling to me that, I mean, that email went around that people really actually sit and take the time to think about, okay, now what am I going to say at the Thanksgiving dinner? That's sad.
Yeah.
For your family and friends, you know.
That's a good podcast topic, though. That really is.
Yeah.
I'll put that on your list. That's a real because our families kill our dreams quicker than, because, you know, I like to call it, like you say, small-minded mentality. And as a race of people of African descent, We are taught to think safe, be safe, get that safe job, have that safe 401k, have that safe retirement. They teach us to be safe and not take risk with our dreams. And I think, because my mother and I just had this conversation this week, you taught me to be safe and not a risk taker. Go to school, get the degree, get a job, get everything safe. Don't, do not color outside. Forbid me if you color outside the lines. You know what I mean? If you take a different, oh no, I decided to drop out of school. I'm going to go to LA. And the whole family's like, no, no. And then we look up, my cousin's on the red carpet. Like, girl, you just, because you said, I'm tired of playing it safe with my dreams. I'm tired of playing it safe with my life. We only get one life to live. And we're up here safe. Yeah, take your play to Brooklyn. Yeah, we're going to have that podcast. Yeah, Charlie, do that book. Madison, shake it up.
Yeah.
Shake it up. Send your pictures to Getty Images. Shake it up.
Absolutely.
Hey, we have one life to live. And that is the thing. We are just, take a risk.
Absolutely.
Take a risk with yourself.
True. At the end of the day, what's safe anyway? COVID-19.
You made the definition of safe. Yeah.
I was at a job for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And just like that, the job is gone. Because social work, it was privatized, so you're dealing with grants and What is safe, like you said, because you can be at a job for 5 years, 10 years, and you go to work tomorrow and your position is gone. Or they don't buy out the company, they bring in a whole new staff.
Mm-hmm.
So what is
you could fall dead sitting on a dream, and in 2 weeks somebody else is in your position.
Let me tell you something. And just as sure as you die, before your family have put you in the ground, baby, they already interviewing for your position.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you play safe. And
tomorrow is not promised. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I feel like life is too damn short to be caught up in these societal norms of what defines success. I think back to even, sounds like we're all passionate about working with kids and with the youth and this societal norm of going to school immediately, going to college, figuring out your career immediately after graduating. There's so much more to life than that. Like there's trades, there's different industries, there's creative careers, there's hobbies, so many different things you can pursue aside from just going to school and pursuing a degree that you might not be passionate about. I mean, if I went to school for what I thought I wanted to do when I was 18 years old, I would not be employed and I would be severely depressed because that I took a few years off to figure out what I wanted to do. And I'm so glad that I did because it led me here, but I could talk about that all day. Like there's, you know, we got to push the limits. There's so much more to life than that. Tomorrow is not promised.
And education isn't for everybody. And you know, this was one of the hurdles and sometimes arguments I would have when I was working in child welfare, because for years I specifically worked with the population that was 18 to 21. And so when they're out of foster care, there's a variety of benefits that the state pays for. So when you when they age out at 18, they go to college. As long as they were in foster care for at least 6 months and a day, here in Florida, your entire education is covered until you're 24 years old. So if you can go get a master's degree, that master's degree, you can go do whatever, and it's completely paid for. And so I went the journey of going to college and getting degrees. I have the master's. I even was almost done my doctorate degree. But that's not for everybody's journey. And I did it by choice with the support of my parents or my grandparents. Some youth, they don't have to go that route, and they could be just successful, if not more. And so a lot of people struggle with stepping outside of that mentality of, no, you have to go to school, you have to go to school. No, you don't. Because like you said, there is a trade.
Yeah.
And you can go to trade school. You can introduce entrepreneurship to these young people.
Yeah.
And they're self-made bosses. They don't have to go to a four-year institution. And so a lot of people are really stuck in the safe. Be safe, go to college, get a good job, and that should be your life. But listen, I know people that did not go to nobody's university and would make way more money.
Yep.
than those who got the master's degrees. It's all about your journey, your passion, your hard work. Sometimes, depending on the industry, it could be who you know. But yeah, it's all about, once again, taking the risk and betting on yourself.
Yeah, well said. Well, my last question before we wrap up for today, do you have a mentor? And if so, how have they shaped your leadership journey?
Well, for me, I have a lot of mentors. I know it's kind of maybe it's just a different path for everybody. People are used to having direct mentors. And so if you don't have someone that you can pick the phone up, which is important to have someone that you can pick the phone up, someone that you can model after, someone you can ask questions, those sort of things, that's important. Mm-hmm. But for me, I have a lot of indirect mentors. Okay, so from my path and the trajectory that I'm on, I look to people like Tyler Perry. I look to Oprah Winfrey, Steve Harvey. I love Steve Harvey. I'll talk about him all day long.
Yes.
Those are indirect mentors, right? Because I don't know them personally, but just their life story and the journey that they've been on and where they're coming from and what they had to go through to get to where they are today. You know, it's something that I find uplifting and motivating, that even on days where I may feel a little bit like, you know, we all have those days, you know, it doesn't matter how strong you are. You have those days where you feel like, do I want to keep on doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, I recall the history and the experiences that those people went through. And it's kind of like something that gives me that little push to keep on going. So those are really my mentors. You know, not the traditional way of thinking of mentors in terms of having a direct mentor, like a professor, a teacher, or whoever, but it works for me. And that's
what it is. You know, it's crazy because I was thinking, I don't have a mentor. I have indirect mentor, but I was like, oh my God, am I going to be the only one who's going to say no? So I was like, you went first and said you have indirect ones, because I too have read plenty of Tyler Perry's books. And I have learned a lot from his journey. I've learned a lot from a lot of his speeches and things. I also resonate a lot with the journeys of Viola Davis. I also have had the privilege of meeting one of my literary authors, one of my literary mentors or idols I look up to, Omar Tyree. When I was in college, I had the privilege of meeting him and picking his brain. And so for me, I definitely have indirect mentors, and I feel like I have an amazing village.
Wow. That's wonderful.
I think you need both. I think you need direct and indirect, right?
Yeah.
So, and like he said, his village. So piggybacking off of Ramon, you need someone that you can call and pick up the phone and pick their brain.
Yeah.
I'm also learning about other resources in our community.
Mm. Yeah.
Things like, you know, if you're trying to get your business off the ground, learning about the SBCA, we call it SBA here in Houston, you know, Small Business Administration. You know, like you have different people where you can meet mentors in every aspect of your life. I even have a mentor when it comes to being a mother, right? Like, because I struggle sometimes with motherhood and work-life balance. How do I turn off when I am just on, you know, like, and I have a mentor in entrepreneurship. I have a mentor when it comes to authorship. You need a mentor in every aspect of your life. And it's okay to have more than one. It's okay to have directly and indirectly, because he's right. I can get up on Instagram in the morning and get a good video. And I'm like, whoa. That was a push that I needed. Like, Lord, was that you talking to me this morning? And so even though I don't know that, but what they said resonated and sounded off within my spirit, that sent joy bells ringing. So you need them directly and indirectly in every aspect of your life. What you think is too little, somebody will love to take you under their wing and show you the way.
Definitely. That's amazing. You know, it's funny that you brought up Steve Harvey. I actually have met him before in 2019.
this is just a funny tangent. Oh my goodness.
I was living in LA at the time. I was working for a nonprofit called the Dream Center. They work with people experiencing homelessness. I was volunteering on Skid Row. I decided to take a gap year after graduating and figure out what I wanted to pursue. That's really when I started to develop my passion for social media marketing as well as photography. But I ended up meeting the assistant director or casting director or something, and they were looking for people to come on and participate in the game show aspect of his TV show. And I was like, sure, I'll go, you know, take a day off and get paid $100 to go play games on a stage with Steve Harvey. That's so cool. So I went and I got to meet him and tell him about the nonprofit I was working for. And all I could remember thinking was, oh my gosh, he's right in front of me. Such a, you know, significant, iconic person. And he is 1 foot away from me and I'm shaking his hand. And I thought it was so funny. That whole like TV film industry is so entertaining. And a great career choice. There is somebody whose job is literally to make sure that his bald head is buffed and shiny and camera ready. That is their job. Like they're literally, somebody is being paid to do that. A non-traditional career choice, but so amazing. He's an absolutely incredible human being. And I loved getting to talk with him a few years ago. He's very inspiring for sure.
Oh my goodness, that's so exciting. It's like, wow, I would do anything. I love, love, love Steve Harvey. And he's got plenty of motivational videos online.
Oh yeah.
His HBO special, that was his first special that he did, you know, in New York. I think I've seen it maybe 20 times. Yeah. I love to watch it. I just love it.
Great person. Yeah. Well, thank you all so much for your time today. This was definitely one of my favorite episodes that we've recorded so far. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I'm feeling fired up. Like I feel the passion. I'm so inspired by each of you. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your stories, and I can't wait to see what 2023 has in store for each of you.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.